WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now, Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. The three of us are all back together. Griffin Bloomstein, Josh Rothert, breaking down what is now officially the commencement of crossover season. It begins this weekend. We're recording this on a Friday morning, partly because we're ready to talk lacrosse, and we'll get into those reasons why, mainly because men's basketball is, once again, kind of fizzling out towards the end of January. Into February, we'll break down their most recent game and all this Adrian Autry speculation. Women's basketball, they're flying high, though. We're going to keep talking about them, rightfully so, because they're playing some of their best basketball right now. And then Brent Axe comes on and talks to me, and we have a great conversation about the future of Adrian Autry and this lacrosse team. We love having Brent Axe on the podcast. He's awesome, and he provides so much wonderful insight. But before we get to that, you know, I listened to last week, and Griffin kind of called me out for maybe not talking about the weather quite enough. And I mean... it's been a very weathering time here in Syracuse. It has been awful. It's so, so cold. I woke up this morning, looked at my watch. It said -1. So that is about how cold it is. Bomb cyclone this weekend, Griffin. You excited for that?
I don't even really know what that means. So I'm going to just take it in, like full experience. It says it feels like -7. So I assume it has to do something with the cold, like it'll touch the negatives maybe, like every day. Clearly Josh knows what it is because he gave me a little face, so you know I'll let him explain it.
Oh, there was one in Metro Detroit not too long ago. I think it was while I was home a couple months ago or whatever. I think it's just like a rapid increase in winds. I know I don't want to get too scientific for you, Griffin, but...
I hate science.
Yeah, you know, I was walking back from the station this morning, and it certainly felt like a bomb cyclone. It just felt like my head was freezing. I had like a brain freeze. Like I wasn't even eating ice cream, and I felt like my head was going to explode. So trying to just hibernate and stay inside probably would be my message to you, Griffin, the next couple of days. I don't know if you have anything that you need to go outside for, but bundle up because it's not going away. It's supposed to be even colder the next 2 days than it already is. So,
all right, well, Griffin, go ahead.
The weather is fine unless it's windy. So yeah. It could be like 10 degrees out, 5 degrees out. As long as it's not windy, like – you can bear through. But if Josh is telling me and reporting the accurate scientific news that it's about to be like windy, like crazy, I don't know what I can do. I might just leave. I might pick up a flight jet out of here.
You know, well, the jet might not get off the ground because the wind might actually push the flight out of the flight path, and then you're just stuck in the air, and it's a bomb cyclone. I don't know about you, but being in the air during a bomb cyclone probably doesn't sound like the safest thing.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I don't know what's left.
Cause you go underground. You go in a tunnel.
I don't think there's any tunnels near here.
No.
I guess we'll be stuck to the confines of the WAER basement.
Hey, that's not bad.
Wow.
Nice and warm down
there's
there.
There's nowhere safer than the WAER basement. I think if you had a zombie apocalypse, I don't think they'd find you if you were in the WAER basement.
You'd be warm. It's always very hot down there. I did find via AccuWeather, that's where I look at the weather most of the times. A bomb cyclone is a large storm that undergoes rapid strengthening over a 24-hour period. It can be tropical or non-tropical. Of course, in Syracuse, it'll never be tropical. You are spot on with that, Griffin. The winds are by far the worst. The snow accumulation's annoying, but I feel like you can kind of work around that. They do a great job plowing here in Syracuse, but yeah, those winds can just be very, very crippling. Similar to the loss that Syracuse suffered on, what was it now, Tuesday against NC State, a game that, in the first half, they had it tied there for like 2 minutes, maybe not as much as that, but it was like, oh, they're in it, they're in it. And then yet another second half of just non-existent, really bad basketball. Quadir Copeland, shout out to him. He had his revenge game. He knew he was up for this game, and he knew he would be up for this game. He drops 19 points, 5 of 9 shooting. I think that's important because when you look at a player like JJ Starling, oh, he had 17 points. He had to take 19 shots to get there. Donnie Freeman was excellent, 24 points on 9 of 18 shooting, plus 10 rebounds. He could only do so much. I mean, he had it going today. Or not today on to on against NC State. There, I think there's games where he's got it flowing. Before this, the Miami game, one before that, he did not have it going. He had it going against NC State, but he's had no help whatsoever. And these players, really, Griffin, I feel like it's coming down to the fact that these players are not playing to their potential, to their capability. Zadiq White has fouled out for like the 15th time this season, it feels like. Kyan Anthony is not really developed into a whole lot. I know he's still just a freshman, but it's kind of stagnated for him. And then all these transfers, none of them are playing up to their standard, which they should be.
Yeah. Will Kyle started out the season great, and I think he's gotten the best of the other team's big men. I guess that was not probably not the right way to say it. Other teams' big men have gotten the best of him in ACC play. I can say that pretty confidently. He's not grabbing 10 boards tonight. He's not putting up 10 points, and the 10-10 mark is probably where you would like him to be every night. And the fact that the players have a lot of skill, a lot of potential, and they're not getting a lot out of them, that seems like a coaching error. I'm just going to put it out there. Like, if players are good and you're not seeing it on the court, which these players are clearly talented. They've showed it last year. They've showed it this season at times. But they're not playing up to their potential. They're not playing even, I wouldn't even call it up to their potential. They're not playing up to their standard. That falls on the head coach. Nate King's getting 4, 5 shots a night when he's been one of your best players recently. That's unacceptable. Nate George going 2 for 10 from the floor. That's unacceptable. There should never be a game where Donnie and JJ combine for 40 and you lose. Like, that should not happen. If they both give you around 20, the rest of the team should pick it up and figure it out. When Autry said after the game, like, why did you leave Sadiq White in with 4 fouls? Autry said he was the only one trying. Like, those were the first words out of his mouth. And then he was like, well, wait a second. But that was his honest reaction. He thought Sadiq White was the only one giving hustle, the only one putting in any effort. And that is a little alarming. Because if you rely on a freshman off the bench who's had an up and down season, has some potential to give you the energy and the hustle out of the gate, that is not good. And that says a little bit about Adrian Autry. And I know people are going to be calling for his head. People have already started calling for his head. And I think people are deserved to do that, the way that this team has been playing.
Griffin, you know the last time this team lost 4 games in a row?
Was it 4 years? It was probably like the last year of Boeheim, if I had to guess.
It was 1992.
Oof.
You want to know the last time they lost 5 games?
60s?
1962.
Hmm.
We're in unprecedented times. I mean, There is a chance that if Syracuse loses to Notre Dame, Autry might not make it back to his office on Monday, because we're talking about a 60-year span where Syracuse has not lost five games in a row, and that's coming into question. And it's not like they've played great teams, AJ Griffin. This is not a hard stretch by any means. The ACC is strong this year. The ACC is strong this year. Don't get me wrong. NC State, great team. Miami, great team. Those are tournament teams. Boston College and Virginia Tech are not going to sniff the bubble this year, and those were two losses. Those were two bad losses. When you look at this NC State game, though, why did they lose their fourth straight game? It's the same issues as it always is, and it's not just Donnie and JJ doing the bulk of the work. I'm looking at the defensive side of the ball. Regardless of if you want to box score watch this game, if you actually watch this game, go and watch their defensive effort in the second half. It's this lazy half-court trap where they leave perimeter shooters wide open. I mean, Darian Williams knocked down five threes. I don't think he had a hand in his face for any of that. He was just sitting there wide open, one of their best shooters, one of the best shooters in the country. Darian Williams can make a three from anywhere on the court, and Syracuse does not guard him at all. And let's say he misses a shot. Syracuse allows 15 offensive rebounds, 15 second chances. You're already in the hole for being on the road in the Lenovo Center against a team that has a better net ranking than you, has more talent than you do, and you give them 15 extra opportunities. There's no excuse for that. And a lot of this falls on Donnie and Will Kyle down low, not boxing out, just letting kind of NC State manhandle them. Even if they're 2-1 down low, that one guy on NC State is getting a rebound, kicking it out, and setting up another open look for a three-pointer. And this happened over the entire course of the second half. This just progressively got worse and worse. You just saw the team sort of give up. And, you know, Griffin, you mentioned the Sadiq White, the only guy trying out there. Yeah, it's visible when the guy that, you know, only plays 10 minutes and fouls five times is playing aggressive defense. And he's also playing whack-a-mole out there. So I'm really not sure if that really does any favors, because handing NC State, you know, 30 free throws or however many free throws they shot in this one, 18 free throws, it's not entirely ideal. And then one last thing, Will Kyle. Great, great offensively in high percentage situations. I mean, the guy gets the ball inside, he can score at a 70-75% clip. And I've said this before. Will Kyle now in the last three games, Syracuse 0-4 in the last four, but let's just look at this three-game stretch. Zero field goal attempts in the second half. Zero field goal attempts in the second half. This is a guy that shoots 70% from the field. You want a 70% look, all you got to do is give Will Kyle the ball within 3 feet of the rim. AJ, they're not doing it, and I don't understand why.
And that's been a lingering problem the last, really, this losing streak, is he just disappears from the offense. And it's really perplexing why. And I understand his game is limited outside of right under the basket. He can't give you a whole lot, but he can give you a whole hell of a lot under the basket. And this team just is not finding him in those positions. And again, I think you guys are spot on with your opinions. I mean, it ultimately is going to fall on Autry. You know, this team is not delivering their expectations. That goes on Adrian Autry. Also, against NC State, he held onto the zone way too long. I mean, it was clear the Wolfpack figured it out. They knew exactly how to do it, how to untie it, because Quadir Copeland was very familiar with zone. And I'm sure when he saw them line up in a zone, he smiled. He's like, oh, I know what to do. Got the ball right inside, right in the middle. Or they kicked it out for, as you alluded to, Josh, a wide open three. And for whatever reason, the second half, after it didn't work in the first half, Syracuse was still going with that zone. And it was just like, why? You know, it's clearly not working, Archer. You can't keep using something that is not working. And, you know, me and Brent have a great conversation about Adrian Autry's future. I don't want to steal Brent's thunder, because he has great analysis on what could happen and some factors that are preventing the inevitable now maybe from happening. So save that for Brent. We're going to get to Brent in maybe like 10 or 15 minutes here. So, you know, hold on to that for just a second. And, you know, the reason I also want to do that is because this team does still have games to play, Griffin. I know everyone's kind of over it, and the season is, I mean, there's no way they make the tournament. They got to pick off probably three quad one wins, and current track record, there's no way they're doing that. Of course, it could happen. I could totally see them beating UNC at home maybe, but I don't really see them getting anything on the road. This Notre Dame game, I mean, the Irish, they played a really good game. Just they went to overtime in their last game. So like they're riding some momentum. They're not having a good season, but I mean it's still like I mean I think it's up in the air if the Orange get it done.
This is a Notre Dame team that, if it was on the road, would beat Syracuse probably by 10 to 15. You're right. You made the statement right. They're not a good team, AJ. Marcus Burton, he's always been a good player, but like he's never been able to carry Notre Dame himself. Brandon Shrewsbury, he's good. And obviously, his father, Mike Shrewsbury, the coach. I just don't know what to expect. Because I'm on the double overtime tomorrow after this game. And let's say Syracuse wins. What are you gonna take from this game? All right, Syracuse won a game. You know, it's Lawrence, they're honoring Lawrence Moton. You hopefully can get a win when you're honoring one of your greatest players in history that passed away recently. Like that hopefully should be the outcome of this game. Syracuse can honor a great basketball player and a great guy and get a win that day. If they lose, I think all hell's gonna break loose. The one other thing that I wanted to say, and now I kind of forget what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
I was teeing it up. I was like, you know what? I'm ready. I'm ready to make this
Was it
point. And
with Fikir
now,
Suare?
no, but we can talk about Akir
No, we don't need to. He played
He
what, two?
hasn't played, Josh.
I know, dude, and look what happens, bro. We're on a 4-game losing streak, and Akir hasn't played in quite a few
Should
games.
he adjust the lineup? Like, do you think Nate George should come out for Bryce Sepher?
I
Is
don't
there
see.
anything he can do to save it?
I don't see you. Why would we sit Nate George? I don't see. There's no experience behind him.
No, I mean,
Griff, do you have a different opinion? I
Bryce
mean,
has some experience.
no, I do not. If you
I
play
mean,
Bryce Sheffer,
Griffin could have walked on at Montana State. I've
I
seen him
think there's an
play
argument
at
maybe you
Barnes.
put Betsy in and move Starling to the point.
Yeah, I've heard that, and honestly, that probably doesn't sound too bad. But Nate George is still going to get 20 minutes because he's still a top six player on the team, whether you
I
like
know,
it or not.
I know, I know. What about Calvin Russell getting minutes? How do we like
Oh my!
that? Hey! I do want to say one thing. His free throw form, amazing. The best free throw form on this team, and I don't think it's particularly close. Maybe Nate George is up there, but William, Ka oh, not William Cal, Calvin
Oh
Russell,
no.
lefty form, it is pure. Dropped an and one for one on the season, highest free throw percentage by far. Talk about a guy that can make a free throw. Who I want you guys to go back and watch his free throw, because
I gotta go through
was
the whole
it
game to get there. I'm
pretty?
not doing that.
Yes, it was great. I
All
really
right.
enjoyed the minute and a half he was on the court
Hey, he
for.
got a steal or he turned it over and then an and one. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, he didn't look like he could do a crossover dribble correctly. I mean, that
No,
was a little
no.
hard to watch. One last thing, Griffin, you
Yeah.
think this team would lose on the road at Notre Dame? I can't,
Yeah.
okay, I think I absolutely disagree. I think they would roll, and I think they're gonna roll tomorrow. Marcus Burton's not even playing right now, so I don't think there's a fighting chance that I know they put up a great game against Virginia and took them to overtime, but I don't think there's a chance that the Orange lose tomorrow. If they
Josh.
lose, I know they lost to BC, and I'm gonna keep picking them until they win. I'm slowly trending down on the picks. I think I'm in like the 40% like win rate right now, and this is with like when we do the picks, you have like the spread and the over under, which are like that's basically a toss up, right? That's how Vegas designs the
Yeah.
odds. The money line odds, you should win probably 70% of those, and I think I'm probably in like the 30 to 40% range right now. I'm gonna keep picking this team until they win because they've been favored time and time again. They're gonna win eventually.
This is exactly what everyone does the first year they do picks. La last
Oh.
year, last year, I think I picked Syracuse to win every game. Like, no
Yeah.
joke, every game of the season. And it bit me towards the end.
Oh,
I
yeah, dude.
almost won.
You're
Almost won,
like I
but I
can't
lost.
fade. I can't fade a 60-year-long streak. If they lose
See
a fifth straight game, I can't do it. The trend says no, mean reversion says Syracuse will have to win this game or else they go back to 1962, and that won't happen.
Hey, if Syracuse goes back to 1962, then you know they have 40 years of winning coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what we need. We need a loss tomorrow, and then the new coach will come take this team to new heights, and that'll culminate with, if we do the math, 62-2003. That'll be 2067. Syracuse will raise another national championship banner.
I don't think the math is right. I think you just threw out a year. It's an interesting year you chose. That's all I'll say.
No, the 62 plus 41 is 03.
Oh, okay, yeah.
26 plus 41 is 67.
All right.
That's nice.
Ostrom Avenue podcast will have you covered for that potential national championship. Griff, you got one more point?
Yeah, there is one more thing I want to say. Mention Marcus Burton. We know he's not playing. He hasn't been playing for about like a month.
Yeah,
a little more than a month. Month and a half, 2 months. That is exactly why Notre Dame could totally beat Syracuse. They just went to overtime, lost by 3 to UVA, who was ranked inside the top 20. Like, I know you're still, you know, getting your feet wet with picks, with like watching this team closely. But to lose to a bad Notre Dame team without their star player is just totally Syracuse.
Yeah. It is. It is.
I'm calling for a Micah Shrewsbury, not a Micah Shrewsbury, a Braden Shrewsbury, and, you know, I'm going to throw this out, Sir Muhammad, 20 piece each.
Wow.
I'm going for a Micah Shrewsbury charges the ref again.
I would be down for that.
Yeah, that's we kind of, you know, you're just kind of asking for an entertaining game for Syracuse to maybe just hopefully keep it close and keep it competitive. The Orange and Irish play 6 p.m. on Saturday. On the women's side, Coach Jack's team is rolling after a weird overtime game against North Carolina. It was rescheduled, and they go to overtime too. So like, that's kind of one where you're going to put the asterisk and say, hey, factors, you know, had to play a fact in that one. But against Georgia Tech, they handled business. This was a young, inexperienced Yellow Jacket side. And there was a little bit of a lull in the first half where the Yellow Jackets made it close. But the guard play from Layla Filia and Dominique Darius was excellent. 23 from Filia, and then Darius with 20. And then on great shooting, 9 of 13, 6 of 12. I mean, that is a recipe for winning many, many games if they can shoot like that.
It was impressive. I want to go back to that UNC game for a second.
Mm-hmm.
What a weird setting for a game. It was like they rescheduled it because they got like dusting of not like sleet or something. Shout out the Carolinas. And then it was a single cam, no broadcaster setup. Like, you got to be a sicko to watch that game.
I know.
And I was tuned in.
They couldn't make it to the game. It was the weather that they couldn't get to the game.
It was the funny part was, like, Syracuse probably should have won that game and, like, pretty, like, I wouldn't say convincingly. Zoje missed a layup under the basket, you know. Overtime, they just didn't really show up. But way to respond. And, like, the game yesterday against Georgia Tech, the start was the most impressive thing. I think this team just, like, they can start strong. And once they have a lead, like, they're going to be hard to beat, because once you feed Izoje down low, she played, I think the starters played like 20 minutes. Darius had 20. Philly had 23. Izoje had 17 and 15. She had like, what she had like 12, 13 rebounds in the first half or something ridiculous? Like, that is crazy. Coach Jack got all of her players in. You know, she said after the game, she was like, I can sleep well tonight because I got all my babies in. That's pretty much a direct quote. From what Coach Jack said. So, you know, vibes are high for Coach Jack's squad, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I think, you know, Uche Izoje has really impressed me this entire season, and moreover the last two games, even that loss to UNC, put up 27 points, another double-double. She's a double-double machine, and just her footwork in the paint is what impresses me the most. And we're talking about a freshman right now. This is a girl who's going to dominate women's basketball for the next 4 years. I mean, she's going to be one of the best players in the ACC for the foreseeable future. There's not a week where she doesn't have a chance to bring home ACC Freshman of the Week. She's done it like 10 times already this year. It's clear that Coach Jack did a phenomenal job in recruiting this past year. And with the transfers, Dominique Darius has been solid. Layla Filia has been very solid. It's good to see her back in the lineup. And she looked like she really didn't skip a beat while she missed time with that injury. Syracuse women's basketball rolling. They're now 4-0 after a loss, and a little bit of a tougher stretch coming up. They got back-to-back road games, and then the biggest test to date this season outside of that Michigan game, number 7 Louisville comes to the Dome next Sunday. So that will really be, I mean, we talk about measuring sticks this entire year. They've met most of the challenges, even if they lost a couple games here and there. A big SEC win against Auburn, a couple road wins early on in ACC play. They're undefeated on the road in ACC play until that North Carolina game. So there's definitely been a lot of impressive things about this Cuse women's basketball squad.
No doubt, and that Louisville game will be a real measuring stick. And as long as they don't have any big stumbles, and to be fair, the Coach Jack's team, as you alluded to, Josh, after they lose a game, they bounce back, and they continue to do that. They are well on their way to the tournament in March, and that's going to be great. You know, we want to see tournament basketball here on the Hill, and I fully expect, I mean, of course, I don't want to presume anything, but it looks as though we will with this team and the way they're playing. So credit to Coach Jack and her team. They are continuing to perform at a high standard. I would argue maybe exceeding some expectations. I don't think people thought the team would be this good, especially with all the new players and everything. But they are really gelling nicely. Got two road games and that big one against number 7 Louisville at home on February 8th. That is a Sunday at noon. As I mentioned at the top, it's crossover season, which is great because it's plenty of things to talk about. And also, maybe it's time to talk about the best, most talented team on campus, and that's men's lacrosse. They get going against Boston University on Sunday at 1 p.m. Griffin, I'm ready. I cannot wait to see Gary Gates' team back on the field and hopefully dominating right from the start. It's a good BU team, but this should be a win. It has to be a win.
Yeah, it has to be a win. Definitely has to be a win considering their schedule this season. They play, I think, 7 of the top, 11 teams in the country, something ridiculous like that. Pretty much their whole schedule is ranked, except Colgate and St. Joe's, maybe Denver and Air Force. So they have 4 non-ranked games this season, which is pretty fierce. BU scouting report on them. They're a pretty young team. They had Timothy Shanahan, one of the best freshmen in the country last year. So we'll see how a young BU team with a goalie that hasn't really started much. We don't really know who their goalie is going to be because there's left after last season. They have a couple guys from the roster last year that can make an impact. Young team, head coach Ryan Poley, he's been there for the whole program. It's 12, 13-year history. So, you know, they're going to be well-coached. They're going to want to win. You know, every team that comes to the Dome and plays wants to beat the Orange. Like, gives you a little motivation, a team, that you're playing one of the top teams in the country, you have really nothing to lose, and you get to play in the Dome, one of the best lacrosse venues in the country. Like, teams love marking that game on their calendar, especially one that's a season opener where there's not really a scouting report. You kind of just like, hey, go in there and play your best, and, you know, maybe you can win. So expect BU to come out hungry. But for Syracuse, like, this isn't no Jacksonville. Like, no. This is not a team that you can just, like, kind of, like, push to the side and get a win over. Syracuse is going to have to show up. You know, I'll be at me just like everyone else who's watching this game. And trust me, there will be a lot of people watching this game because it's Joey Spoelstra time. Like, this is the year all eyes are on Joey. Will he drop 10 points in the season opener instead of standard? Who knows? But this is going to be the year where Joey wins the Touraton, makes the national championship, wins the national championship, and becomes SU's points leader. Those are the things that should happen this season. And it all starts, and I think you'll have a pretty good tell if it's going to happen on Sunday.
Yeah. You said it right there. I mean, we've said it pretty much every episode. Spoelstra needs, I think, 63 points to become the program's all-time leading scorer, well within reach. He had 90 points last season. The team's leading returner in the points category. And Griff, I don't know if you remember that game last year to open the season. What would it be like if they could put up a statement like that? 24 goals in that opening win last year. I think they led by like 19 or 20 goals for most of the second half. Like it was insane watching that game. Like a lacrosse team can actually be up by 20 goals. And, you know, a big piece of that was Michael Leo, obviously. A little bit of a question mark, though. They lose Owen Hiltz, and Trey Deer is out for the season after that tragic car accident. So a little bit of a different approach here. Michael Leo, I'm thinking, maybe slides up to the attacking slot, and that leaves some new space in the midfield line. I think maybe you see some Wyatt Hoddle, Finn Thompson's hopefully healthy again. So there's a lot of shifting around that could be done, but I'm interested to see what this front line looks like. I mean, Spallina's obviously going to be out there. Peyton Anderson played midi in high school. He could move back to that midline if he's not starting on this lineup, but there's a lot of, I think Gary Gay has a lot at his disposal right now. He can really move these guys around and really cater to this team's strengths. And I think I'm very impressed with the depth on this team, despite how much they lost last season. And obviously with McCool in net, there's no one cooler to start in between the pipes than Jimmy. So I think this team, obviously there's going to be, like I say, measuring sticks the whole season. You got number one Maryland coming to the Dome in a few weeks. You got a 6-game road trip. There's plenty of action, and Syracuse will be battle tested throughout the entire season. So it should be a great season and fun to watch.
It should be, and it's all about how you start. And at times last year, slow, stagnant starts were a theme for Gary Gates' group. So you don't want to do that, I guess, especially against, again, like you said, Griffin, and I have a conversation with Brent that's very similar. Every team that plays Syracuse is going to be, they're circling on their calendar, you know? BU is probably, this is like, oh, imagine what a statement we could get if we can play the Orange, even just close. Maybe they don't get the win, but if they play them close. So Syracuse will have to be ready for that. Me and Brent get into a lot of lacrosse stuff as well towards the back end of our conversation. And we're going to get to Brent in just a moment. I'm teeing it up. But we got to talk about Syracuse women's lacrosse as well, because their season is close to starting. Reggie Thorpe did his first media availability of the season. You know, I didn't say a whole heck of a lot, but there's some excitement around this team. And they also start with a gauntlet, you know, Maryland, then North Carolina, Griffin. I mean, both at home, but those are tough, tough games to start your campaign.
Yeah, and Maryland's a team for, I guess, both men's and women's lacrosse that is kind of like, okay, like, you sure you want to play this game in the regular season? Because, you know, they're going to be good. They're going to give you a good fight. And a loss to a very good team at the start of the year can kind of hurt your momentum. I feel like, you know, what we would see with like Boeheim is he would schedule these easy opponents early in the season and kind of like build your way up so that you're ready to take on one or two tough non-conference opponents. That's not the case for lacrosse. That's not how this schedule builder, whether it's Gary or Reggie or someone in athletics or combination most likely, decided to make this schedule. You're going hard opponents right from the bat. And for this women's lacrosse team, I kind of like the fact that there's not really an expectation. Like, the Carneys and the Tyrells and the Ward, they're all gone. There's not really a statement leader that is supposed to lead this team back to the Final Four, which has been the case for the last 7-8 years. This is a team that has a lot of young talent, but now they've kind of become sophomores, juniors. You have Emma Muchnick, who's leading this team, probably with the most points from the midfield. It'll be interesting to see if Caroline Trigas can take a step up. But there's no expectations. Like, this team is not projected to win a national title. This team is not projected to win a game in the Final Four. Like, this is a team that if they make the tournament, will most likely make the tournament because that's the expectation for Syracuse. Win a couple games in the tournament, maybe make a little run, and like that could really start some excitement around this program. After, yes, they've been really, really good, but they've never been able to get over the hump recently. You can't make that national championship. You can't win the national championship when they've made it. So I kind of like that they don't really have expectations, and, you know, they can just go out there, play, and there's not going to be a lot of noise on them. UNC is best team in the country. They have the best player in the country, Chloe Humphrey, by far. So it'll be interesting to see if Syracuse can just stir some ruckus in the ACC.
I'm right there with you. And I think it kind of the coaching switch kind of comes at a really good time. You mentioned the how young this team really is. You know, Caroline Trinkus, Melina Cotter, two dynamic freshmen in the midfield game, and then Emma Muchnick as well in the midfield game. You know, there's a lot to like about this team, and I like how you said it. There's no expectations, right? First year coach Reggie Thorpe comes back. I think, you know, you want to go out and compete, but if you don't, I really don't think you can get too down on yourself this early in his tenure, because the pieces that this team has and will have for the next 2-3 years, if you can just be competitive in some of these games, that should give you a really good feeling about the direction this program is headed, because, you know, they were competitive in some games last year, but they weren't necessarily all that great. I mean, when you look at the last year of Kayla Trainor's tenure, and they finished the season 10-9, and there was some really close games. They put a lot of one goal games, you know, that loss to Clemson. They had that OT loss to Johns Hopkins. And then they lost to Yale twice. Like there were some games that were a little unconventional for the style of play that this team has. So I mean, regardless of if this team makes the tournament, competes in this tournament, if you're competitive and you're seeing what you should from your sophomores, I think this team has a lot of potential for the years going forward. And that's really all I'm looking for, is to see some spark, see some signs that this team is going to be competitive down the road.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see Reggie Thorpe on the sideline. Just some new leadership for women's lacrosse. Not that, you know, it got stale with Kayla Trainor, but I think it was time for a switch. So their season gets going, not this weekend, but next weekend. Without further ado, I've teased it up. And I love talking with Brent Axe, and we have another great conversation. He really, you know, listened closely to the things he has to say about this basketball team and Adrian Autry's future. Has some really good opinions and facts about the process of what it takes to dismiss Adrian Autry, if that is the outcome for John Wildhack and this athletic department. So without further ado, it's Brent Axe here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Super excited to have Brent Axe back on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. We get Brent right before football season, and then we get him at the middle of basketball season ahead of lacrosse season. So you get two doses of him, which is great because he has so much insight. Brent, welcome back on for I don't know how many times now. I'm losing count, but glad to have you back on.
Yeah, as long as I still have the belt, that's all that matters. If anybody's catching up, you get me right back on.
Yeah, well, we only get Mike Waters one. Like, we get him right at the start of basketball season. We could bring him on again, but then it could be a
deal. You don't want to do that. Mike Waters, you know, guys, he's been on the beat for 30-something years. Why would you want his insight? Come on, give me a break on that guy.
We don't need it. and, you know, when we brought you on for football season, it was a lot of, you know, optimism with the season and what was going to happen. You know, it tailored out, didn't pan out for Fran Brown. And when we did speak to Mike Waters, there was, once again, lots of optimism for a basketball team that, you know, looked like it was better, more talented than last year's or any of Adrian Autry's teams. And, you know, holy smokes, it's gone up to smoke. It really hasn't panned out. You know, I know it's hard to just probably put it in a sentence or anything, but how do we get from almost beating Houston to now Syracuse, you know, can't get by any ACC team?
I think it's coaching. I think we are seeing, and again, to the listeners, I got a little bit of a cold going here, so pardon my voice, but excuse me, I got to reset my voice there. Give me a sec, just drink some water. This is a more talented team than, how can I describe it? This team should be better. We saw it in Vegas, right? Now I get it's a different time of the year and a different situation, but if you give a great team like Houston the push that they did, and the only thing that cost you in that game was your free throws, and then you give Kansas the push that you do in the next game, Iowa State blew their doors off, but then you go and beat Tennessee. Like, you've got to build from that, right? And then they lose to Hofstra. And free throws were an issue throughout that, but we started to see some other things that were encouraging about this team, namely their defense and their points off turnovers. And you just saw a better team on the floor than last year, and certainly arguably the most talented team that Autry has had. But what has happened is we have seen this pattern of this team just wilting in the second half, and that's coaching. That is a lack of direction. That is this, I don't even know what you call this offense, but it's not a structured offense. What you're seeing other teams doing is when the going gets tough and the tough gets going, they go to their identity. Syracuse doesn't have that. You see the ball movement slow down, if there's any at all, in this iso ball stuff where one guy dribbles and four people watch. I think the main culprit of this, and I don't want to pick on him here, but I mean, just you got to look at the situation, is Nathan George is not panning out as the point guard I think they thought they were getting, right? This is a guy who just has not decided yet whether he wants to be the offense or run the offense. And just the other night, he goes 2 of 12 from the field. I think he only technically had 3 turnovers, but there were a few more air quotes turnovers when he just drives in the paint and kind of says a prayer and hopes for the best, right? He can't drive by people. He just gets in the paint and hopes the shot falls. So to me, this all comes back to coaching and structure and lack of a true blue identity on the offensive side of the ball. There's just too much freestyle going on out there. And when you have 24 and 10 from Donnie Freeman and it's wasted, you can't have that, right? Donnie Freeman made such a difference and gave this team such a lift that he can't put a Superman cape on every day. But I know I'm harping it back to the last game, but I just think it's an example of just a lot of things. Like Nate Kings has 5 shot attempts. Tyler Betts only gives you 3 points off the bench. Kyan Anthony's a freshman, and I think we have to be fair in how we assess him, but he's just not progressing to the rate that he's giving you that bounce off the bench consistently that you need. I mean, we're getting into February now. We're getting into the harder part of the schedule, and it's that old U2 song. You know, they still haven't found what they're looking for.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, you know, the losses, you know, in recent games, the defense has just gotten progressively worse. And again, I keep thinking back to the start of the season. I went to the game in Philadelphia when they played Drexel, and, you know, all Adrian Autry wanted to talk about was defense. You know, he had this whole orange zone thing, which I haven't heard him bring up, in, you know, all of this month. That has really disappeared. Do you think that's because of the losing, or is that, again, on Autry maybe not holding his standards to what he said at the start of the year?
Well, and remember in that stretch there, he looked at all of us in the press room and said, there's nothing wrong with the offense. Yeah. I guess if you don't have an offense, something can't be wrong that doesn't exist, right? So maybe he was right about that. The biggest concern to me is how the defense has just disintegrated.
Yeah.
You know, there was a stat, I think, coming into they've lost 4 in a row, but in the last 5 games, they've given up like, I think it's like 85 points per game. And then the season prior to that, it was like 66. And I think you knew things were going to bump up once they got to ACC play, but that is a huge jump, right? So what's up with that? Like, at the very least, this team could settle on that and get the points off turnovers and create opportunities. And we've seen the zone creep in a little bit more, which has not been effective. I give Autry credit for just, he said it the other night, right? Everything's on the table, just trying to figure out what he can. But if you have an inconsistent offensive identity, your defense is wilting, you're inconsistent from the three-point line. We know it's an adventure every time they go to their free throw line. What do you lean on? Like when I'll say it again, when the going gets tough and the tough gets going, great Billy Ocean song, right? What do you lean on? Who's your guy? It's just, hey, Donnie, go out there and save the day. Just reminds me of my beloved Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
Here's the plan. Josh Allen, go save us, right? Yep. Like there's just an utter lack of direction and identity on this team. And now that the defense is wilting, like that was something they could harp on. And Autry talks so much about how hard this team plays and the heart that they play with. And I mean, that's great. That should be baked in the cake. I want to see this team play smarter, not harder. They play hard enough. They have to play smarter.
Yeah, certainly. And I keep going, you know, back to the start of the season. And I know you can't dwell in the past. You got to stay to the present. And this team isn't performing well. But I want to go back even further to like last, I guess it was still March because the transfer portal rules were different last year. And, you know, I was praising the likes of an Alex Klein and the job that he did. I thought, oh, okay, this is what this team needed. They needed more experience in conference. They needed a Nate Kings. They needed a Tyler Betsy. it hasn't really panned out. Should he be getting some of the blame?
Don't
think so?
Not at all. I don't think so, because you said it. He did his job. What did they need? A point guard. He got the point guard that led the ACC in assists per game last year. They needed a three-point shooter. Nate King shot 45% from three-point range. You got Tyler Betsy, who was a project, was somebody you kind of had to get on the up and hope that he could contribute. I think he still can, by the way, if he's used properly. Sadiq White and Kyan Anthony are top 100 recruits. Now, that's not Klein, but like the influx they were getting to combine with Donnie Freeman, who is well on the way to being a first-round pick, and J.J. Starling, a senior leader, who was, what was he, 20 points per game last year? And he had to, because he basically became the team at a point. On paper, Alex Klein delivered, right? So it harpens back. I know I keep going back to the Bills, but it's like Brandon Bean said, here's this team. And I think we discovered that Sean McDermott looked at Brandon Bean and said, well, there's holes here, 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 and here, and I'm going to do what I can with this. It's the opposite here. Yeah, Alex Klein delivered a team that Adrian Autry, if I'm Klein, I'm like, no, man, I gave you a team. This, and I think everybody sees it, right? And the key to that is where you got these guys from. And I didn't even mention Akir Suare, who's played somewhat of a, you know, a complimentary role off the bench. Georgia Tech, Cincinnati, okay, Oregon State, high level, in some cases, Power Four, Power Five programs. Whereas the year before, we were talking about, you know, Hofstra and Georgia State and programs that you got to make a major leap to contribute in the ACC. So I don't put any of this on Klein. And another thing I'd like to dispel is NIL.
Yeah.
Now, is Syracuse spending what Duke does? No. But this is a team, trust me, these guys get NIL. I see J.J. Starling in commercials. I see guys getting paid. This is a roster that is, go talk to Boston College. Go talk to some teams at the bottom of the ACC and their problems with NIL. Could it be better? Of course it can. Every school is begging for more NIL money. On the women's side, Felicia Leggett-Jack was just saying it the other day at her media session. They need more money to keep up with what they're doing. So everybody's asking for more money. But that, to me, that's a lame excuse. Yeah. Oh, it's NIL. No, look at the roster. You've got good players.
Yeah, definitely. I think you bring up a great point with the NIL that not a lot of people are talking about. And I heard you bring up this point, which I think is so, so important. You brought, I forget, it was one of your post games. You brought it up. Mm. And for WAR, we have a post game show where the wonderful people of Syracuse get to call in. We love that. But boy, do they just think firing Adrian Autry is like turning the lights on and off. Yeah. It's not that simple. And you brought up a fascinating perspective and point with the whole chancellor situation.
Yeah.
Just explain that to people that aren't, you know, probably aware that the university is actively looking for a new chancellor and how that kind of intertwines with the athletic department.
Yeah, this is a real twist in the situation. So right now, Syracuse is actively searching for a new chancellor. Kent Severud has already announced he's going to Michigan. Now he's serving out the rest of this year, but he's a lame duck. So I don't think he makes the call on this, nor do I think he should make the call on this if you're on the way out, right? So when the new chancellor is named, and I don't know when that's going to happen, I would imagine that you've got to put that person in place soon to send the message to the university community, like, this is our new leader. When that chancellor looks at the athletic department, are they going to keep John Wildhack in charge? Are they going to keep current leadership in structure? Because making a decision about the head basketball coach at Syracuse is equivalent to a lot of major schools making the head coaching choice in football, right? Football is still the sport that drives everything. It's still the biggest decision you can make in an athletic department, but basketball at Syracuse is 1A. That is a major decision, right? So ideally, you want to have all this in place by mid-March when this NCAA tournament starts and you're either tracking coaches that are coaching in the tournament that you would want as candidates if you are looking for a coach and be ready to strike and ready to go. So that complicates this. If this was just John Wildhack making the decision and we could point at John Wildhack, and right now it still is, that simplifies the process. But who knows? And from I've heard some things about who it could be. It's not confirmed or anything. Yeah. But if they go with the person I think they're going to, and I don't want to speculate here, but what we can speculate about is they're going to look at everything, and the athletic department could get an overhaul. So the timing of this weirdly could work out for Autry in that, like, they won't have time to address this, but it is a major issue. And here we are at the end of January, going into February. It would behoove Syracuse to tell us who the new chancellor is generally, just to get that process flowing here. But that all that's item one for the new chancellor when they get to the athletic department is, what do you do about the basketball coach?
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating point. It's kind of deciphering of who everyone's bosses is at the end of the day, and who's, you know, who's going to be making the calls in certain situations. Another interesting fact, you know, and again, I would love to talk about this team in the current state and the games they have coming, but it just doesn't look that good. So I'm going to look to the future now. There's no, like, who's recruiting? You know, there's no incoming freshmen as of right now. Is, you know, how concerning is that? And is that also, like weird? Like, shouldn't this team have guys lined up?
I would encourage you. Matt Norlander from CBS wrote a piece about this before the season started. Mm-hmm. Syracuse is not alone here. There is a lot of uncertainty about recruiting in 2026 and beyond, just because of the structure of college basketball and NIL and everything. So Syracuse is not alone there. It is still weird, though.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, all through last year, what did we talk about? They knew they had Kyan Anthony, and they knew they had Sadiq White, right? And my timing might be off there, but you knew before this season started that you had an influx of freshmen, and they added a couple late as well. To not have a commitment next year, I get the portal's the portal, but you still have to get one or two impact transfers to come to recruits to come to Syracuse University. Donnie Freeman, in recent years, highest rated recruit since Carmelo Anthony. Obviously, Kyan Anthony, Sadiq White, top 100 guys. Like, that still matters. And if anything, in basketball, it matters more, because you get one big, like, they're tracking Jordan Smith Jr. right now. Like, you get a commitment from him, like, that's all you need.
Yeah.
In theory, right? Whereas in football, it's great that they got Calvin Russell, but they need like 10 of him in football. In basketball, you can get one guy, you can anchor the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's also the fact that you don't stick around that much. You know, it's not like you're getting one for 4 years. Unlike in football, there's a little bit more, you know, guarantee of a development, perhaps. Obviously, the transfer portal has kind of blown that up as well. So it definitely is something to keep an eye on. And just the last thing with basketball before we pivot over to lacrosse, what happens the rest of the year? You know, I it sucks, because, I mean, in my 4 years at the university, by the time February hits, it's all kind of just been fizzled out, hoping for a ACC tournament, you know, miraculous run. And it just feels like we're once again in the same position.
That makes me sad that you didn't get to experience Syracuse basketball at its peak. There is nothing in this town than when Syracuse is not only in the tournament, but making a run. Like, it's the town shuts down. It's incredible. So I'm sorry that it appears you're not going to experience that, short of just the heater of all heaters that this team has to go on. And, oh, by the way, the schedule only gets harder. North Carolina twice, and Duke, and SMU, and Virginia. Ooh. And, oh, man, that is just a run. So what happens is, when do you make the decision? Yeah. When do you make the call? Because technically, you can go into the ACC tournament with a chance to go to the NCAA tournament. But I don't know if you've seen Syracuse's record in the ACC tournament, but I think I've won more games in that tournament than they have. So that's, and again, with the leadership structure vacuum that they're in, when do you make the call? Like, if this team, it just keeps stumbling and goes on this losing streak, like, say, let's say they lose to Notre Dame, and then it's college basketball, anything can happen. Maybe they pull off an upset here or there, but if they go on an extended losing streak here, you have to address a short-term situation, because it's going to be, I call it the tea kettle theory. There's a tea kettle on the burner. It's screaming, and you just got to get it off to relieve the pressure of that, right? But look, I think we all know the answer to this. It's what John Wildhack said. It's meaningful games in March. If you don't make the NCAA tournament, I don't see how you can bring Adrian Autry back as the head coach. I just don't see how you can do that. That would be a five-year stretch, which you didn't get to experience, and I'm sorry you didn't, a five-year stretch of Syracuse basketball not in the NCAA tournament, which, by the way, he is part of all five of those years. He did not parachute in here. He's been a part of that. That is unthinkable. So there is no way you can bring him back if that's the case.
Yeah. And the class right before me, the one that graduated last year, they were the first one not to see any tournament basketball since, you know, Jim Boeheim, or, you know, early days, Jim Boeheim, which is fascinating. It will be interesting to see what happens the rest of the season. It feels like Adrian Autry can always pull out one signature ACC win, but I think he'll need more than one this time around.
Be a hell of a story if he does. And yeah. I root for good stories.
Absolutely. So, we all do.
For your sake, honestly, like, I want you guys to experience this. I can't root for the team, but I can root for good stories, and I can root for you guys to experience this. So I truly do hope you get to experience it.
Well, one thing that I am hoping to experience, you know, when someone says, oh, what class were you? I'll say, I was the class of 26. Oh, yeah, I was that lacrosse class, that lacrosse senior class that maybe gets the job done on Memorial Day weekend. You want to talk about basketball schedules? I mean, this lacrosse schedule is the ultimate gauntlet. Is that make the expectations less high because you have such a tough schedule, or is it still like, holy smokes, this is the golden era class, you got to get the job done?
I think that it's fascinating because what could make this team what they are is the schedule. And what could bring them down is the schedule. You know, Paul Pasqualoni, the former Syracuse football coach, everybody has kind of their version of this expression. But one thing he used to say a lot is the hottest fire makes the strongest steel, right? So either Syracuse is going to go through this schedule, this insane schedule. Syracuse always has a tough schedule. They have to, because there's no automatic bid out of the ACC. So they've got to really inject that thing with as much RPI as they can.
Exactly.
But for Gary Gate to put together a schedule where you are going on the road for six straight, and you are playing teams like Harvard, who brought you to overtime twice last year. You're going to Princeton, a team that took you to the brink in the NCAA quarterfinals, one of the greatest lacrosse games I've ever seen in my life, right? You're going to go to Denver. You're going to go to Penn. You're going to two games in Colorado at altitude. Why not? And let me put it to you this way. They probably aren't going to have to pack any sunscreen for that trip. You're playing Maryland at home. Just, there are no breaks on the schedule. None. Even St. Joseph's is a good team. That's not the throwaway game. Like, they're actually a team that could work their way into the rankings this year. So you're either going to be the strongest team you possibly can be, or you're going to melt under the heat of this schedule. I love that Gary is challenging these guys. I love that he is saying, this is the kind of team that we have, but I have got to elevate the expectations. Like, we're not going to do the same thing. Like, John Desko, who just got into the Ring of Honor at Syracuse, and congratulations to him. John Desko fully took advantage of the dome, right? I don't think they left the dome most times until the end of March, because why would you? You know, we're talking right now at the end of January with this, whatever they're calling it, the polar vortex around, and teams are canceling games left and right. Yeah. Syracuse, it's always 70 and sunny in the dome, as they like to say. So, man, I am fascinated by this, because that schedule is a beast. It is an absolute beast. And look, as you go through the season, stuff happens. God forbid there's an injury or something, and it does not let up. So, at the very least, Syracuse is always a featured game for a lot of teams, but now Syracuse has to treat the schedule that way. Every week they are playing a huge game, because they are.
Yeah, certainly. And I think those road games are also interesting, especially the ones in Philadelphia, Baltimore. You're expecting a good orange crowd, I would think, you know, with that. So I think maybe Gary Gate was smart in that way in scheduling those road games that make it a little bit of a home crowd. But even, you know, Boston University, the first game of the season, that's no layup whatsoever.
And not at all.
You know, and lacrosse is, you know, it's interesting how it works with the RPI. That really is the rule of thumb when it comes to, you know, if you're playing postseason lacrosse. You know, I think with this schedule, is there maybe more margin for error? Where in past games, it was like, oh, you can't slip up against these three teams. But now it's like, well, if you do slip up here or there, your RPI will still be pretty good with this schedule.
That's a great point. And you made two good points there. One, you're going to Baltimore, you're going to Philly, you're going to Boston, you're going to Denver. Like, Gary even said this. I talked to him about the schedule, and I got him on the phone. The first words out of my mouth are, are you crazy? But he did make that point. Like, they're going all over the country. They're still selling this game, right? This is, you're recruiting and you're selling the game and you're going to a lot of big cities so you can see them. But you made a great point about the committee is going to recognize that.
Yeah.
So let's say you lose to Maryland. Let's say you stub your toe at Princeton. Like, there are so many opportunities to make up for that. It does give you more margin for error in that your RPI, their RPI, now this is last year's RPI, but ranges from 2 to 38 in their opponents. Their lowest rated RPI team is Air Force, 38. So that's the thing you have to do, and where Gary is smart. They've given you the blueprint. This is how you make the tournament, right? And he took full advantage of that in recent years, especially this year, and how he put his schedule together.
Yeah, and you kind of like that philosophy as a neutral. I mean, the more better games you get in college, the less of those, you know, sleeper, you know, non-competitive games, maybe the better for
and,
viewing.
And what a treat for us.
Yeah.
What, sorry to interrupt you, but
no, you're going
put aside RPI and all this stuff. Yeah. What a treat for lacrosse fans. Yeah. Every week is a big game for Syracuse. That this is going to be so much fun. I cannot wait.
And since coming here, I've fallen in love with the game of lacrosse, partially because I still feel it is a college game, with players staying at the same spot for 4 years, with there being competitive games every week. It really just feels like a vintage college sport, and I love that, and I hope that never does change with the other sports, you know, constantly in flux and all the changes there. Got to talk about him, Joey Spallina. He's been under the microscope since he's gotten here, rightfully so. He's all this talent, this and that. People always criticize his, like, stats. You know, he doesn't score enough goals. You know, at the Touraton, every game we're going to watch, it's going to be like, oh, here's the, you know, one of the Touraton favorites. What do you think he needs to do just to make sure he's a good team player and that the team success comes first and it's not so much about the individual things? Because credit to him, he never seems, every time, you know, he talks to the media, he never seems to be caring about him first. He really, I think, always puts the team aspect before him.
Joey has had one of the brightest spotlights of any athlete that I have covered in Syracuse from the minute he walked on campus, right? 22, took on the legendary number one recruit, came in with so much hype. I remember that first game he plays against Vermont and he goes like 1 of 15 and everybody's like, whoa, what's going on with this guy? Then, of course, we're in the social media age where people have criticized Joey that, you know, great number one pulls like Sean Light at Notre Dame and Will Schaller at Maryland will shut him down. Joey is at a disadvantage at times because he's not the biggest guy. He's not the strongest guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he is the smartest player on the field at all times. So that's what Joey has to do, is be smart about, you're drawing the number one pull on the other team. Who's open? How do you run that offense, right? So once they draw away from him, that's going to open up some opportunities for him. Balance that out because you've got a great attack. Now, Peyton Anderson has to step into that third spot, but Finn Thompson and Joey Spallina, I'll put them up against anybody. That midfield with Michael Leo and Luke Roa and Wyatt Hoddle and McCarthy and guys that kind of have to step up this year, I'll put them right up there as one of the better midfields in the country. The defense, Billy Dwan and Riley Figueres, by the way, is getting completely snubbed in all of these preseason rankings. I know you got to pick one or the other. It's a good problem to have. But I don't think people realize how freaking good he is. Like, he is one of the most fundamentally sound defensemen I've ever watched. He just doesn't screw up. You've got a great goaltender, and you've got a great faceoff guy. Now, I know we're talking about Joey, but that's my point.
No.
Joey has to look out there. You don't have to do this yourself.
No.
You don't. And he is the quarterback. He's the axe attackman. And when Gary Gates says Joey's got to do Joey things, those are Joey things. Joey's stats last year, 35 goals, 55 assists. Think of that gap. Think of how much he is running the offense, but make no mistake about it. When he sees a matchup and he has to be the offense, Princeton game in the tournament, he can do either thing. That's what makes him so dangerous, right? You shut down Joey Spallina, there's a line of other guys that can do it, but you have to shut down Joey Spallina because the minute you lax on that, no pun intended, he's going to kill you. He will find the angle and generate that offense.
Yeah. And last one for you, you referenced the Bills, and I'm sorry to bring this up, but, you know, they have, it's been, you know, it was like, oh, you got to get, you know, get to this point. They've gotten to every point except the last one, the big one. For Syracuse, right. I think last year was all about getting to that Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. They got there, but you especially know, being a, you know, a Bills supporter, it's not that easy to just get right back there. What do you think is not necessarily stopping this team from getting there, but is there a aspect that you know you think could be really challenging and something that people maybe haven't thought of or seen yet?
Yeah, it's called the Maryland Terrapins.
Yeah.
They have to beat Maryland. And not only do they have to beat Maryland on February 13th, which, by the way, I don't know if you can get the day off from work or what your situation is. Yes. For those of you at school, take the day off and go watch lacrosse at the Dome, because you've got Syracuse, North Carolina women's lacrosse, Chloe Humphrey, the best player in college lacrosse.
Love how they did
with that. Joey Spolina.
With the back-to-backs.
And then, exactly. And then Syracuse, Maryland.
Yeah.
On the same day. Like, yeah. What a treat. So go to that.
Friday the 13th, too.
Friday the 13th. Yeah, there you go. So maybe that's what Syracuse needs.
Yeah.
To beat Maryland, because the Terps have beaten them 8 straight. That's they have to put it in their conscience that they can beat this team. Because you brought it up. Getting to the Final Four last year took a lot of pressure off these guys, because they got back there. They showed they could do it. But then Maryland punked them. They did. You go watch that game. Maryland punked them. So if they can put that in their conscience that we can beat Maryland, because they're going to see them again, they're going to play them again, probably in the Final Four. But Maryland's not on the schedule twice, but that's just the way the lacrosse gods operate. You got to get through Maryland. If they can get through Maryland, they can do anything. That's the biggest thing to me. That schedule, all the other teams, everything we talked about, it still applies. Mm-hmm. But if they beat Maryland on the 13th, they become the favorite to win this thing. And that's the biggest thing that they have to overcome, because they've done everything else, right? So to use the Bills comparison, he wasn't around this year, but they've got to beat Patty Mahomes in Kansas City.
Yeah.
To truly exercise that demon. He has kept them out of the Super Bowl more than anybody. Maryland has kept Syracuse from achieving what they need to more than any school out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome, Brent. Thank you so much again for taking the time. Great insight as always. And enjoy the rest of the basketball season and into lacrosse as well.
Thanks for having me. Sorry for my poor voice today, but I do appreciate you having me on. Always enjoy talking to you guys. Awesome.
Thank you. A big thank you to Brent Axe, as always, for coming on to the podcast. He's one of the most trusted people, trusted outlets here in Syracuse with news and happenings. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this basketball season plays out for Syracuse. Their next game, we're recording this on a Friday morning, so they play Saturday evening, a 6 p.m. tip. Maybe a little interesting of a tip time, I don't know. So that means the double overtime goes until 10 p.m. I hear Griffin Bloomstein is on that double overtime, so maybe be sure to extra tune in and call in so you can burn all of Griffin's lousy takes on the air. McClure remodeling countdown to tip off starts at 5:30. And then, as I mentioned, it's crossover season, so lacrosse is on Sunday. Men's lacrosse, Gary Gate, the class of 2026, they get going. Here on Sunday, 1 p.m., McClure Remodeling countdown to face-off. Yes, face-off time is at 12:30, and then the double overtime goes all the way up until 5. So be sure to tune in. WAR 88.3, WAR.org is the place to be this weekend for basketball and lacrosse and Ostrom Avenue podcast. We'll have it all recap for you next week, plus some more lacrosse conversation as well as we really enter into LAC season. Be sure to listen to previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts or at WAR.org. Until then, though, we will see you guys next week. Enjoy the games and stay warm this weekend.